It's Visions Morning Cafe with Karen.
Connecting faith to life on the Morning Cafe this morning. Joining me is a beautiful woman from Victoria. It's Samantha Jekyll from Fernie Creek. Good morning, Samantha, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
Well, I think it's more my privilege, really. I mean, you're a 40-something mum. You've got, what, 5 teenage kids plus an extra. You're also a children's pastor. I think life must be just a little bit busy for you, hey?
Yeah, look, it does get a little crazy sometimes, but it's fun and I love it.
Well, let's rewind a tad before we get into some of the more recent nitty-gritty. Tell me what your family life was like as a young'un and what characterised that season of your journey?
Yeah, look, growing up, I actually grew up with my parents being alcoholics. So my father was a really abusive man, physically abusive, and was in and out of prison. And my mother was also an alcoholic and quite manipulative, and would play a lot of emotional games with myself and my siblings. Mm-hmm. But also, as I was getting older, she actually was sexually abusing me as well, which you don't often hear of mums doing that.
Wow.
But that was what happened in my case. And so growing up was quite traumatic in my younger years. And when I reached around the age of 7, I was asked to stay down in my class. And it was then that I met this little girl. And in my book, her name's Heidi Jones. It's not her real name, but and Heidi became like a special friend that introduced me to church and to Christianity and to God. And so from then on, Heidi's family kind of took me under their wing and made me part of their family, even though it wasn't a formal foster care or adoption or anything. I just knew I could call on her family whenever I need to, and I could go up there for, you know, dinner or go away with them on the weekend to their farm. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first introduction to what a Christian family looked like, or a normal family, if there's such a word as normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so from about the age of 10, I accepted Jesus into my heart. And even though the abuse was going on still in my family life and at home, I had this great family around me to help me get through. Eventually, that abuse outworked itself in my teenage years, and I went off the rails and just kind of became quite manipulative and lied a lot. And then I eventually got married, and that certainly outworked in my married life. And then I had some amazing prayer ministry, and God really touched my life, and with some counseling, and with the help of God, I was able to turn that all around to being able to be a functional, you know, young woman back in my early or mid-20s. And my marriage, you know, to Peter just grew stronger and stronger from that point. And we now have 5 beautiful teenage kids, as you said, been married for 26 years.
Wow.
And have been able to take people into our care as well.
Samantha, what a synopsis in less than 3 minutes. Congratulations.
Yeah, quite a bit, if you could imagine.
I think you've practiced that one, have you?
No, actually, I was just thinking, often I get stopped and asked what was the purple pants about, because I wrote an autobiography about my purple pants. And
well,
then,
of course,
go.
I was actually about to say, you mentioned the word book. I hadn't mentioned that earlier, but yes, you have written an autobiographical book or text entitled My Purple Pants. Obviously, that's the book you're referring to with regards to Heidi Jones.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, so about a few years ago, I had it really laid on my heart. It was over a process of actually about 8 years that I thought, you know, maybe I need to write a book, and really just thanking Jesus for what he had done in my life and thanking God for where he had brought me has just completely turned my life around. And over the process of that 8 years, I kind of fought the idea and thought, no, I won't. And eventually I sat down and wrote My Purple Pants to be an encouragement to other people that have been through abuse, and to show them that there is healing and you can recover and you can be transformed.
Now, I'm just guessing here the relevance of the colour purple, but maybe you should tell me, is there a particular reason why you chose purple other than the alliteration of the purple pants?
No. Yeah, look, it was a story. So when I was around 13, coming from such a dysfunctional home, and we were certainly poor, I often wore everyone else's clothes, all the hand-me-downs. And I had saved up $6, and this day I thought I'd go down the street and buy myself something new. And I often gave my mother every cent I got, just because that was the way she had taught us, that she deserved everything we had. And so I took this $6, snuck down the street on my bike, went into a shop and saw these amazing purple corduroy pants. And you could imagine, it's early 80s. These were really in. And so I tried them on. They, you know, I thought they looked amazing. And looked at the price tag, and they were not $6, but $40. And so I then, back then, you could lay by. And so I asked the lady if I could lay by them. And she said, sure can. And I put the $6 on them and rode all the way home. And on the way home, I was thinking, you know, how selfish. I should have given the money to my mom. I'm never going to be able to pick them up. This is ridiculous, you know. And just kind of beating myself up in my head more than anything, and got home and went out the back, and we had this old swing, and I was swinging on the swing when my mother yelled at me that there was a knock at the door. And so I ran through the house and opened the door, and there was just absolutely no one there. And we lived in a housing commission area that was really well known for domestic violence, so it was really rare for it not to be noisy in our street. And there was just no one anywhere in our street. There was no cars, there was no kids out playing, it was just silent. And I looked down, and here's a brown package, and in that package was the purple pants that I had tried on that morning. Wow. And so, you know, being a bit suspicious, as I am, and inquisitive, I rode all the way back down the street and went into the shop and asked her and said, you know, who picked up these pants? I came in this morning. And she looked at me and said, you did. You came back and you picked up the pants. And I was like, no, I did not. And, you know, for me, as a young kid, that was just almost like a kiss from heaven. Yeah. It was like, even though the abuse didn't stop, it was like God was there, and he provided me with these purple pants. It just was this amazing love that I felt, overwhelmed by the Father. And, you know, I don't know if that was an angel sent in, or if someone from the church saw me go in and then, you know, ran in after me or something. But to this day, in my heart, it just really showed me the absolute love of the Father for his daughter. And like I said, it didn't take away from the abuse, but it certainly just showed me he was walking with me.
That is so very special. I think for me, my first assumption was the use of the colour purple, referring to perhaps bruising in that time of your life.
Okay.
But
yeah,
it's very interesting to hear what you've said. Definitely touched by an angel. Samantha, this particular book has actually been changing the lives of countless abused children such as yourself. Let's press the fast forward button. So your teenage years and your early young adult years, what were they like? Where did your journey take you?
Yeah, look, I was completely messed up, and I was still going to a church, attending youth group, but I had moved to Melbourne, so I was in the country, and I met a guy. And you could imagine, you know, a young, love-starved child just wanting that attention of love. And so my boyfriend and I, our relationship got serious. He asked me to marry him, and I said yes, and that was also exciting. And then he suddenly started seeing cracks in my personality, because I had no closure other than hiding my past and what it looked like. And so he kind of realized that this was trouble, and so he called off our engagement. His name's Peter. And our friendship still was very strong, and so he and I eventually fell before our marriage and had sex. And it was during that period that I decided that I wanted to marry him, and there was nothing that was going to stop me from marrying this guy. And so I lied to him and told him I was pregnant, and him just being really wanting to be a godly man, even though we had done this, you know, we were really sorry for what we had done. But because he really wanted to be a godly man, he said, look, we're going to get married and we'll work this out. And so we planned a wedding and got married in 3 months. But just before we got married, I told him that I had miscarried the baby. And he was broken, you know, that one, he was thrown into this marriage. He was going to marry a girl that he wasn't even sure he was loved. And then two, now the baby that he thought I was carrying was now gone. And so we did get married, and our first year of marriage was just hell, as you could imagine. I was really argumentative. I was manipulative. I would lie to him regularly. And he eventually just said, Sam, I don't know how we're going to survive this. You know, I want a marriage to last forever, and I just can't see this happening. We would be up 2 or 3 in the morning, just me screaming at him. And I decided that if I told him the truth, that would probably set me free, and just, you know, he would become a, you know, a knight in shining armor, and he would just wrap his arms around me and say, it's all going to be good now. And so I had organized for the leaders of our church to come together, and I told them, as well as Peter, that I lied to him. I was never pregnant, and I never miscarried the baby. And we separated for 1 whole year. You know, he just walked out of there a broken man, and I was already broken. This just kind of poured more insecurities into my life as well. And it was through that period that God really spoke to Peter and talked to him about Joshua 9 and just talked about the deceit. He made a covenant with the Gideonites under a cover of deceit, but the Lord said he had to honor that. And so that's exactly what he felt the Lord say, you know, you didn't inquire of me before you married Sam, and so I want you to go back and to her. And I want you to pray for her. And so a year later, he came back and he said to me, you know, I'm going to sleep in this room and you're going to sleep there. And we're just going to pray and we're going to seek God and ask him exactly what he wants to do in this situation. And it was through that time that God, through a lot of prayer ministry and through counseling, that God really set me free and turned my life around. And it took lots of hard work on my behalf to be able to, work through issues. But faithfully, God walked with me through that journey and completely flipped our lives around. And, you know, 26 years on, we're still happily married and probably more in love now than we ever have been.
Wow. My goodness me.
That was the short version.
Oh, yeah. I mean, two very courageous acts. Firstly, on your part to fess up and be honest with Peter. And the other courageous act, my gosh, his decision to, yeah, take you back, to renew
Absolutely.
Your relationship and look forward with a hope and with a future. Very, very
yeah.
special. And what, 26 years, you're saying?
Yeah. So, you know, if you think back, I was 21 and he was 23 going Oof. On 24. So we weren't mature people back then.
Uh-huh.
God really did a work in us. And, yeah, we just saw the power of God, especially, you know, on our marriage,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, yeah, all glory to him for what he's done.
So right now you've got 5 teenage children of your own, aged 14
mm-hmm.
to 18. How long did you have in your marriage with no kids?
Yeah, we had 7 years all up.
Uh-huh.
So we had the first few years of trouble where we had a year of marriage and then a year of separation. And then Peter came back. And look, it took about 4 years for us to come to a place where we could actually look at each other mm-hmm. and laugh
mm-hmm.
and say we loved each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a real hard yards in there. I remember one of the toughest conversations we had was we sat in our kitchen
mm-hmm.
and we said to each other, we don't love each other. This is a commitment marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kept bringing that before God. Lord, this is a commitment marriage. You need to give us love for each other. And, you know, God did that. He's faithful, you know. He's faithful to answer our prayers. And so eventually, you know, over time we found ourselves laughing and enjoying each other's company. And before we know it, you know, our commitment had turned into love. And it became a flourishing love marriage, not just a commitment.
And what a difference that makes, hey?
Absolutely it does. And like I said, you know, God is faithful to answer our prayers, but it does take the hard yards for us to walk, you know, alongside that as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being willing to share your story. I mean, your earlier years were certainly turbulent ones. And, you know, as a wife and as a mother, 26 years ago, you married Peter. You're still together even throughout the challenge times. You now have 5 teenage children, 14 to 18. I'm gathering there might be some twins in there.
Yeah, number 3 and 4 are twins.
Okay.
A girl, boy.
Uh-huh. And within, what, the middle of having your own children, you made a choice to take in another young person. Tell us about that.
Yeah, look, we got a phone call. My twins were 8 months old, and our oldest was three, and we got this phone call one night from a distraught girl on the other end. Now, we had met this young lady once before in our home, and I could tell something was wrong with her. I think when you've come from an abusive situation, you can recognize abuse. And so we knew there was issues in her life, and so we gave her our phone number and said, if ever you need us, give us a call. And left it at that. So a few weeks passed and we get this phone call from this girl who is desperate on the other end. It's a rainy night in Melbourne, which isn't unusual, but it was freezing cold. And this girl says, you know, I'm heading out to Tullamarine for a few nights and then I'm going to hit the streets. And I was like, who is this? What are you doing? And it turned out her name was Beverly. And she was basically running away from home. She had had enough and was leaving. Now, she was 19, but at that point in time, she probably was emotionally around the age of 13, 14 maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we asked her to stay where she was. Now, she had thought that she had rung her sister, so she was shocked to find out that she hadn't rung her sister, but she had rung me instead. And so we convinced her to stay put. She was at a service station, and I drove out and picked her up and brought her back to our house. And that's 16 years ago. So she's lived with us. Well, she's not physically living with us right now, but she's lived with us over all those years and certainly part of our family. And my children certainly would see her as their big sister. So we picked Bev up and then we just did life with her. We walked with her through her journey. And, you know, as much as it was hard, as she worked through all the stuff, all the layers of hurt and pain in her life, it was really a privilege to be able to walk with her and see her now. Like, she's 35 now and an absolute gorgeous young woman and a beautiful heart for people and loves God with all her heart. And we're just so proud of her and where she's come from and where she is now.
So in a sense, you could say, hey, you're a 46-year-old mum. You have a 35-year-old daughter.
Yeah, I know. We laugh about that because when she was a lot younger, you know, that 11 years was quite big.
Wow.
Where now the gap closed a little bit. But anyway.
Sam, I'm curious to know, I mean, as a children's pastor, were you in that role at that time, or you just were able to identify with this young girl, what she was going through, and your heart just wanted to take her in?
Yeah, look, I wasn't in that role at that time. I was certainly a stay-at-home mum looking after my four children. And so when Bev came to live with us, it was just a point that I had walked that journey before. And like I said earlier, you know, you can sense when someone's been abused or in an abusive situation. I think when you've walked it, you just see it in other people. You discern it. And so being a children's pastor is actually more of a recent thing. Now that my children are older, I'm doing that now one day a week and then, of course, on Sunday. So.
Well, I can certainly understand your heart to do what you're doing, and I certainly wish you, pray you well in that capacity. But you taking in Beverly is what led you to being nominated very recently as a state finalist, the Victorian state finalist for a Mother of the Year competition. Tell us what's just happened in the last week or so.
Yeah, look, I was really shocked, actually. I just got a phone call saying that I had been nominated by Beverly, and I was completely shocked, and would I accept the nomination? And, of course, I said yes, more for Beverly than myself, but I said yes, and then we got invited to the state finals, and I was very casual about it, and I didn't actually think I would win the state finals, so I had no expectation. In actual fact, I told all my kids to dress down for the fair and we'll just go shopping afterwards and have lunch. And so Bev and I kind of rocked up dressed in our jeans and our jumpers, like, yep, we'll just do this and then we'll go. And of course, I was announced as Victoria finalist, which was really humbling and honouring, and more honouring that, I mean, it was just incredible how I just saw God's hand on it, you know, that he had done so much in my life, and the world saw that, because this is a secular thing, and it was noticed by that. So it was a real humbling thing to be able to stand there on his behalf and all the other mothers
you
of
bet.
Victoria.
Well, congratulations. I mean, it is humbling. It is an honour. It is a prestigious award of recognition. And this was something put together by a leading child protection charity. So it was just last week. I was trying to track you down earlier in the week, in the middle of the week. At the end of last week, there you were in Sydney, 3 days of festivities. What type of things did you get up to?
Yeah, look, we were spoiled rotten. We had boat cruises, we had cocktail parties, and then we were able to go and visit some of the work that Barnardo's do. So we went to a place called Urban House, which was incredible and very eye-opening. And then we also got to meet, you know, each other and sit alongside all the other finalists and hear a bit of their journey and where they had come from, what life looked like for them. And that was really an incredible experience, actually, just to be able to meet these ladies and do life with them for 3 days.
Now, this is a beautiful woman. She's a wife, she's a mother, she's an author, she's a children's pastor. She has just been celebrating her state win with the Mother of the Year competition for 2014 as the Victorian finalist. Again, congratulations, Sam.
Thank you.
But something was going on prior to these recent festivities. Tell me what you and your husband Pete were involved in with the Go the Extra Mile event.
Yeah, so about 6 years ago, Pete and I decided to start a charity. We've always wanted to donate money to different causes and found that, you know, we always felt like we didn't have quite enough to give. And so we prayed, and Peter found inspired to put on a 50-kilometre endurance walk. So it's not an easy walk. It's on here in Melbourne, so we advertise it. And we have walkers come along and they pay a registration fee and then they raise money. And that money goes to a charity that Peter and I have chosen. So in the beginning, when we first started, it went to an organization called Gospel for Asia and their work in India. Yep. And then it went to Focus on Their Family, and it went through to the prevention of teenage suicide. Yeah. So we were with Focus for 2 years, and this year we've been supporting an organization called Hope Builders International, who do work with orphans in Uganda, an amazing work that they do there.
That's amazing, the fact that you even have time to do this with your five teenage kids. Tell me, what does your hubby do? What's his thing?
Yeah, look, he's a pastor 2 days a week. He works at our church as an associate pastor. Yeah. And then he works on the events the other days and does a little bit of IT work. He's got his hand in lots of pots. So, and if I was to be honest, he puts in way more hours than I do with Go the Extra Mile. In actual fact, this year, because I was so busy, I wasn't able to do as much, hardly any to him. But, of course, I was there on the day supporting and got involved, and so do our children. They all volunteer and get involved as well.
So he was literally going the extra mile while you were literally being the Mother of the Year.
That's right. It's really funny because some people have said, oh, you're incredible. And I think, maybe we need to clarify.
And tell me also, as the children's pastor, so which church are you guys involved with?
Yeah, we're involved in Hills Church in Ferntree Gully. So it's a local church and an incredible church, of course, because I love it. That's why I'm there.
And because you're there. So that's why.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you have a real heart for kids who've come from tumultuous backgrounds like yourself, but also for women and for mothers. You know, right now, I guess I'd love to conclude this conversation with an encouragement to women in particular, to mums in particular, to wannabe mums in particular, to mums in waiting. What's your heart? How would you encourage them in their walk today living in our Australian society?
Yeah, look, one of the things that burns within me is that your past does not define who you are today, and it doesn't have to define. So if you were from an abused background, that does not define the person you are, and that with the help of Jesus and God, you know, we can turn that right around. So, you know, my situation is that my past does not define my mothering skills or who I am now, but God defines who that is. And to give a solid, safe foundation for your children to grow in, you know, it's vital that we give them a solid foundation. And to me, that foundation to be so solid can only be if it's based in Christ. It can't be if you're not, you know. You really need to hang on to that and then instill that into our kids. And so my children, you know, it's my prayer that they will not be defined by who I was. They will be defined by who God has created me to be in this moment. Mm-hmm. So they know my past, of course. They know, you know, where I've come from. They've met the rallies. They see it. But they can see that, wow, you know, Mum, you're not who, you know, the world would have said you would have been, you know. I would have been on the chart of should have been an alcoholic. You know, statistics says I should have been an alcoholic or perhaps an abuser, or perhaps I shouldn't even be here. You know, I should have committed suicide years ago. If you were to look at statistics and the way I was raised up, that's what the world would say. But when we have Christ, that turns and transforms us, and it does not define us. And that would be my passion, you know, that you have to believe that where you've come from does not define where God is taking you. And to give that solid, solid, safe foundation for our children to grow in.
You are an inspiration, Samantha. And I've got to ask you, if anyone wants to get their hands on your book, My Purple Pants, how can they find it?
Yeah, they can go to the web, www.mypurplepants.com.au, and we can send them a copy. Word and Kurong were, I did have it in stock. I'm not sure if it's still in stock, but yeah, they certainly can get it from our website. That's $15. That's including postage.
It's mypurplepants.com.au. I've been speaking with Samantha Jakel from Ferny Creek, Victoria. God bless you, Samantha. God bless your family. And with all that you're doing, we look forward to hearing more.
Thank you so much. And it's been lovely to spend the morning with you.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Like what you've just heard? There's more great podcasts, or you can listen to us live at vision.org.au. And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation of any amount will help us continue connecting faith to life. Learn more or donate today at vision.org.au.